Now let's move on to Book 5, Chapter 2, Parts 1 and 2, which are on Sources of the Public Revenue. Chapter 2 is entitled, Of the Sources of the General or Public Revenue of Society, and we'll be looking mostly at Part 2, which is called Of Taxes, going up through Article 3 of Part 2. Part 1 of this section is quite small, and it's devoted to how certain small republics may be able to fund themselves without much taxation. Smith mentions one idea, namely using mercantile projects, such as a bank or post office, and also the notion that a government may accrue some rent from the land it owns. Nonetheless, Smith does not think that these are good or sufficiently large general recipes for funding governments in larger and more opulent societies. In the much longer Part 2, Smith goes on to outline some core principles of taxation, and these are mostly good common sense. The first principle for Smith is that tax payments due should in some regard be proportional to the benefits which an individual derives from both civilized society and government. The second principle is that taxation should be certain and not arbitrary. Third, payment of taxes should be convenient and possible at convenient times. And fourth and finally, taxes should involve, to whatever extent possible, a minimal financial burden on the citizenry. Smith goes on to consider taxes on land. For background, recall Smith's theory of land and also his theory of rent. Think of rent as a surplus accruing from the differential value of some lands over others. That is, rent is simply an extra payment which you get if you own and hold the land and simply sit there. Land, of course, is not a mobile asset. In this setting, if a tax is levied on land, well, basically the landowner ends up paying the tax. The land has nowhere to run away to, and the landowner does have a surplus out of which to pay the tax, and thus taxes on land are borne by the landowner. Smith also argues that a tax on a land worker still falls basically on the land. So imagine a very simple model where the land worker doesn't really earn very much, and the landowner is earning this large surplus value. Well, it's hard for the land worker to really afford to pay over that tax. What will happen in the bargain between the two, according to Smith, is that the landowner will demand less payment for working the land, and the tax gets put on the land once again. Note that Smith has quite a clear understanding of what we now call tax incidence theory, and tax incidence theory is simply the notion that the immediate place where a tax is levied is not necessarily the place where the actual value of the tax ends up being paid. When it comes to taxes on profit, Smith argues that it's much harder to tax capital than it is to tax land. For Smith, the return to capital is modest anyway. There's less of a surplus to be able to pay out taxes from. And for Smith, it is hard to assess the value of capital. It's much easier to assess the value of land. The way Smith makes the argument, taxes on capital basically fall on the consumer. Smith's underlying or implicit model is never formalized, but in modern terms, you can think of Smith and a lot of other labor theorists of value as operating under a constant cost assumption. So in this model, if then a tax is put on capital, that increases the costs. The initial costs are given here. That's the level of average cost and also market price. If you raise those costs, you move to a new equilibrium here. So you move from this point up to this point, and you move to a new higher price here, and you can see that a lot of this tax is indeed borne by consumers. Here's one way to think about where Smith misses some points on taxation. So say in standard modern theory, we have different cost curves. We have flat average cost, we have rising marginal and average cost, and of course, we have declining average and marginal cost. The constant average cost curve here, that's just one special case. So in general, when taxes, say, shift quantities produced, they are shifting us along supply and marginal cost curves, and that will change factory turns, it will change relative marginal products, it will change how much money is being paid per unit to the factors of production, and all of those will have complex implications for tax incidence. Smith, not being a marginalist, he didn't really grasp any of that, so the core case you get is basically flat average cost, which looks like this, and then you put a tax on some aspect of the product, say you put a tax on labor or on the product itself, that raises costs. But what's happening to the factor returns? Well, the price has gone up by exactly the amount of the tax, and when you subtract the tax, you have the same amount of money being paid to the factors of production, and you tend to have very simple tax incidence effects, such as higher prices, but without a lot of reshuffling of how income is being distributed among factors of production. Smith also considers taxes on labor, but in general he's much more sympathetic to the idea of taxing land. He argues that a tax on labor will either fall on land or it will increase the prices of goods to consumers. We can again put this in a modern setting. So if we draw our graphs like this, with P here and Q here, and we postulate a constant cost industry and a downward sloping demand curve, the market structure looks like this. Now, one possibility is that the tax on labor simply is taken out of the rent of land, and then essentially in terms of market price, nothing in this diagram changes. There's simply an alteration in the distribution of the proceeds between land and labor. But if it doesn't come out of the rent of land, then again we're back to the case where the tax going up, it increases price, we are raising price and average cost, and the market price moves up to this level, and we can see this price difference here, that shows that a lot of the tax is indeed falling on consumers. Overall, Smith is getting close to some important points here, but he doesn't really quite have the analytics to drive the whole thing home.